Hi, everyone. Great to have you with us on Urban Highlights, Cities of the World. Today, we are doing a really deep dive into a city that, well, it deserves a closer look. We're talking about Basel in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
People often see it as just, you know, a stopover, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But our sources paint a picture of something much more dynamic, complex, and honestly pretty unique in Europe.
Absolutely. I mean, sure, it's the third largest city in Switzerland. That's true.
Right.
But just calling it that, it really misses the point. Basel's whole identity, really, it comes down to its geography.
Okay.
We're talking about a city that isn't just near a border. It basically is the hub, mm-hmm. the cultural, economic, even logistical center for three countries all meeting right there.
And that's exactly what we want to get into today. We're going beyond, you know, the usual tourist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We want to understand how this specific spot, this meeting point, of Switzerland, France, and Germany,
mm.
how it's created a city that's, on the one hand, this global hub for amazing modern architecture and art.
Yeah.
You mentioned names like Gehry and Zaha Hadid.
Yeah, cutting-edge stuff.
But at the very same time, it holds on to these incredibly old, sometimes, frankly, kind of bizarre local customs, like a huge carnival that kicks off at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
In the dark.
Exactly. That contrast is key. So for you listening, our goal is to really synthesize this, get you up to speed quickly but thoroughly.
Right.
To move past just the sights and get to those specific, memorable things, the details that really make Basel. Well, Basel. We'll cover everything from these grand red sandstone buildings to, believe it or not, a waterproof fish bag.
A fish bag. Okay, I'm intrigued. Let's unpack this then. Starting with that fundamental thing. Basel's place on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about Basel's identity, you really have to start with this core concept, the one that shapes pretty much everything. It's the Dreiländereck.
Which just means the three-country corner, right?
Exactly. And this isn't just a line on a map. It's where physical geography directly drives international stuff, economics, culture, the whole deal.
And what's really fascinating, I think, is just how close everything is. Our sources really hammer this home. It's not some abstract border region. It's like a daily reality for people.
Mm-hmm.
You can literally stand at the marker point where Switzerland, Germany, and France all meet, and it's just minutes from the city center.
Wow.
So that location, it basically forces every decision, every local plan, every economic strategy, every cultural event to be this trinational thing.
And the economic impact of that must be huge, right? I mean, being right there at that crossroads.
Oh, absolutely massive. It instantly makes Basel a major transit point, a
yeah.
huge logistics hub, and yeah, a massive employer.
Okay.
The analysis we looked at shows that a really significant chunk of Basel's workforce actually commutes across those borders every single day.
So people living in France or Germany work in this as well.
Exactly. We're not talking a few people. It's like hundreds of thousands of movements daily. People, goods, money, all flowing between three different national systems.
That constant back and forth, that need to manage everything from three different angles.
Yeah, that's what forces Basel to be, as they say, Weltoffen.
Mm-hmm.
Open to the world, it simply can't function if it closes itself off. The whole city is basically engineered for constant, smooth interaction.
Okay, but here's the twist, right?
Mm.
You'd think all that international influence might, you know, water down the local culture.
I would think that, yeah.
But the sources say, nope, not really. And this is that big sort of productive contrast we mentioned. Even though it's super international, super Weltoffen, Basel stays incredibly rooted in its own history, its own traditions. It's very proudly Basler.
And that dual thing, you know, the intense cosmopolitan vibe layered right on top of this deep traditionalism, that's really the key to getting Basel.
Mm.
Our sources don't see it as a contradiction, actually, more like a stabilizing force. The strength of the local traditions provides this kind of anchor,
right,
which lets the city dive into modern international business without, you know, worrying about losing its soul.
It's a fascinating balance.
Hmm.
You've got global companies funding cutting-edge buildings, but the core local stuff.
Yeah.
The rituals, the old town structure, even the local dialect, Baseldeutsch, that's all sourcely protected.
Exactly. The city doesn't feel like it has to pick between its 14th century history and its 21st century reality. It just kind of weaves them together into the daily life.
And you actually see that in the buildings, don't you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You walk around the city center and you'll see these amazing medieval bits, narrow winding streets, that distinctive red sandstone.
Right.
And they're literally shoulder to shoulder with super modern polished steel and glass buildings, company headquarters, cultural centers.
And that works because?
Well, because Basel has always been a crucial trade and cultural hub, right back to the Middle Ages. its location on the Rhine at this three-way border demanded it. So the history isn't just something pretty to look at. It's like operational. It's baked in.
So pulling it all together,
yeah,
the geography means Basel has to be efficient, stable, welcoming. That need for global teamwork combined with this deep local pride, it creates this sort of urban confidence.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. A confidence that lets it invest heavily in the future while still really cherishing its past. It's like a masterclass in managing development, all driven by the unique reality of that three-country corner.
Okay, so to really get a quick, solid handle on Basel, you need to know its physical anchors, the places that really ground its history and its reputation for art.
Right.
We've pulled out 10 specific spots from the sources that kind of represent the heart of the city, starting with, well, its historic power structures.
Let's start right at the top, yeah. History and governance. These buildings are like the visible proof of Basel's longstanding importance.
First up, it has to be the Basler Münster, the cathedral. I mean, this is the landmark, isn't it?
Unquestionably. We're talking about this big structure, mostly built from that dark, kind of rusty red sandstone, Buntsandstein, they call it regionally.
That color really stands out, gives it that deep medieval feel immediately.
Yeah, it does. It started Romanesque, but it's got these two really prominent, distinct towers, the Gurksturm and the Martinsturm, that basically define the city skyline.
And behind it, there's that terrace overlooking the Rhine, the Pfalzplatz.
Yes, the Pfalz. The sources make a point about how significant that viewing platform is. It's not just a pretty view, though it is that.
Okay.
Historically, that terrace, the Pfalz, it sits right on top of where a Roman settlement used to be, which suggests, you know, this spot has been strategically vital for something like 2,000 years.
Wow.
And the view from there, it instantly connects that ancient religious authority of the Münster down to the Rhine, the river that's always been the city's working lifeblood.
Okay, so from the spiritual center, let's go to the political one. Uh-huh. The Rathaus am Marktplatz. The town hall.
Right, and if the Münster is sort of solemn and red, the Rathaus is, well, it's vibrant, almost theatrical, isn't it?
It really is. Our sources mention that incredible bright red color, obviously, but also the really elaborate facade covered in colorful frescoes and that central tower. It's late Gothic with some Renaissance bits added on.
And the crucial thing is, this isn't just some old building preserved for tourists. It's the actual working seat of the cantonal government of Baselstadt.
Still in use today.
Still very much in use. And that continuity, that function, that's key. It reinforces that whole blend we talked about, centuries-old art and architecture, providing the backdrop for modern government work.
Right. And then guarding the old town center, you've got the Spalantor.
Ah, the gate. It's magnificent, isn't it? Dates way back to the 14th century. And it's highlighted as one of the absolute best-preserved city gates anywhere in Europe.
You can see why. With those two big flanking towers and the main gate tower in the middle, it's a really solid reminder of the old city walls.
Exactly. And it's not just picturesque. That gate signals the historical importance of, you know, controlling who and what came in and out, which ties right back to Basel's early days as a vital trading city, connecting routes north and south.
And those trade routes depended completely on the river, didn't they? Which brings us to the main link. The Mittelerbrücke. The middle bridge.
Foundational. Absolutely foundational. It's been connecting the two sides of Basel-Gross-Basel and Klein-Basel since way back in the 13th century. Yeah, making it one of the oldest river crossings in Europe that's still, you know, continuously used.
That must have been a huge deal when it was built.
Oh, pivotal. Before that bridge, the two halves of Basel were pretty much separate places. Building it really established Basel as this unified critical trading city on the Rhine. It cemented its role as a major European artery way, way before the whole Dreiländereck idea was fully formed.
Okay, so this historical backbone, this infrastructure, it leads us right into what Basel is maybe most famous for globally today. Mm-mm. Art.
Mm-hmm. Its status as an art metropolis. And yeah, this is where it gets really interesting.
It seems like it has serious credentials here.
Staggering credentials, actually. Starting with the institutional heavyweight, the Kunstmuseum Basel.
Right.
And this isn't just any museum. It actually holds the title of the world's oldest public art museum. It was established back in the mid-17th century.
Wow, oldest public collection. Think about that legacy.
Exactly. For hundreds of years, Basel has been deliberately collecting, curating, and showing art to its citizens.
And the collection itself?
It's incredible. Spans from Renaissance masters. Like, it has the world's biggest collection of works by the Holbein family, who were based in Basel.
Oh.
All the way through to the big names of the 20th century. Picasso, Expressionists, you name it. That depth, that historical commitment, it gives the modern art scene there incredible weight.
And complementing that history, there's the contemporary side.
Right.
Anchored by the Fondationweiler.
Yes, exactly. Located just nearby in Rienne. And the experience there starts even before you see the art with the building itself.
Designed by Renzo Piano, wasn't it?
That's right, the Pritzker Prize winner. He's known for how he brings light and nature right into the gallery space. And this building is specifically designed to showcase this amazing collection of modern masters, Monet, Cézanne, Picasso again, Rothko.
And this is where that whole three-country corner thing becomes more than just geography, right?
Yeah.
It's like a cultural model, too.
Precisely. Because integral to Basel's reputation as a center for design is the Vitra campus. But, and this is key, to visit it, you physically have to cross the border.
Into Germany.
Into Weil am Rhein, Germany, yeah.
But it's still considered part of the Basel scene.
Absolutely. The sources are clear on this. Even though it's technically in Germany, Vitra is part of the Basel cultural ecosystem. It's like an architectural pilgrimage site.
Because of all the famous architects involved.
Exactly. Frank Gehry, Zaha Hadid, Tadao Ando, Herzog and de Meuron. The list goes on. It's basically proof that here, culture just jumps over national borders. Basel's influence, its funding power, allows this huge cross-border design park to exist, cementing the city's rep as a global leader in design and architecture.
That smooth integration seems really unique. Okay, let's quickly touch on a couple of other spots, more playful maybe, or educational.
Sure. You've got the Zoo Basel, which the locals call Zolli.
Right.
And it's not just any zoo. It's the oldest one in Switzerland, been running since 1874.
Wow.
And it still has a really strong reputation for conservation and education, which kind of continues Basel's long tradition of scientific interest.
And then for something completely different, kinetic, fun, the Tingley Brunnen.
Ah, the Tingley Fountain. Yeah, created by the Swiss artist Jean Tingley. It's basically a celebration of, like, mechanical randomness.
With those black moving machine parts splashing water everywhere?
Exactly. These playful, sort of weird machine figures constantly churning and splashing in the water. Tingley apparently saw it as this ongoing conversation between these mechanical actors.
Uh-huh.
Continuous, chaotic, but somehow really delightful. And it's located right where the old city theater stage used to be, which is kind of a perfect metaphor, isn't it? Kinetic, unpredictable, but always entertaining.
That's great. And finally, tying back to history and making things, the Basler Papiermühle. The Paper Mill Museum.
Yeah, and this is cool because it's a living museum for paper, writing, printing. It's not just looking at old stuff behind glass.
You can actually do things.
You can. Visitors can actually try their hand at the historical processes, making paper, setting type, using old printing presses. It keeps those old crafts really alive and tangible, even now in the digital age.
Okay, so we've got the Grand Cathedral, the centuries of trade power, the bright red town hall, this world-class cross-border art scene.
Mm.
But the sources suggest the real flavor of Basel, the stuff that gives it its unique confidence, is found in the really local, sometimes truly odd customs and quirks.
Exactly. The deep cuts, you might say.
Right. This is like the secret handshake stuff for Basel, the deep local traditions, the very specific little quirks in how things work,
mm-hmm.
the things that define what it actually feels like to be from Basel, separate from all the global business going on.
And you absolutely have to start with the river again, because the Rhine there, it isn't just scenery or transport route. It's like an active part of daily life, especially in summer.
You mean the Rhine swimming?
Yeah.
The Rhine swimming.
Exactly. Every summer, you see hundreds, sometimes thousands of locals just turning the river into this giant natural swimming lane, floating downstream for miles.
But how do they manage their stuff? Clothes, wallets?
Ah, this is where that fish bag comes in. The sources make it crystal clear. This whole tradition basically depends on one ingenious local invention, the Wickelfisch.
The winding fish. Okay, tell me about this.
It's crucial. It's this specific teardrop-shaped bag, waterproof, obviously, and designed to look like a little stylized fish.
Okay.
And the genius is how it works. You put your clothes, your phone, your wallet inside, roll down the top really tightly to seal it.
Right.
And then it does two things at once. One, it keeps all your belongings completely dry while you swim. And two, the trapped air makes it act as a buoyancy aid.
Like a little float.
Exactly. You often see people with it tied to their wrist or held under an arm. You just jump in and the current takes you, bag and all. It's just brilliant, practical, local design, enabling this centuries-old custom to work even on a busy modern river.
That is clever. Okay, sticking with ingenious, low-tech river stuff. The Klingentalfaren, the ferries.
Yes, these are amazing. Our sources highlight something really remarkable about them. They operate with absolutely no motor and no oars either.
Wait, how do they cross the river then?
It sounds impossible, right? Until you understand the physics. They use nothing but the powerful natural current of the Rhine itself. Yeah. There's a strong steel cable strung high across the river, and the ferry is attached to that cable. The ferryman just angles the boat's rudder against the flow of the water, and the force of the current pushes the ferry sideways, gliding it smoothly across to the other bank.
That's just pure physics as transportation.
Isn't it? And the fact that they still maintain this system today, when obviously motorboats exist, it's a statement. It's quiet, efficient, totally green, and just deeply traditional. You have to admire that commitment to using the environment instead of fighting it.
Definitely. Okay, moving from the river to the really big traditions.
Yeah.
And these sound like world-class oddities, starting with Basler Fasnacht.
Fasnacht. Yeah, it's Switzerland's biggest carnival. They call it Dreischinstadtag, the three most beautiful days. But the timing, that's the really weird part.
It doesn't start at a normal time, does it?
Not at all. No noon kickoff, not even sunrise. It starts precisely, and they are very precise about this, at 4 a.m. sharp with the Morgenstrahl.
4 in the morning. What happens?
The sources describe it as this incredibly solemn, almost spiritual moment for everyone involved. At exactly 4, boom, all the city lights go out. Total darkness.
Wow.
Then the drums and piccolos start up, all playing the same traditional march in unison. And the only light comes from hundreds of these huge, elaborate, hand-painted lanterns that the carnival cliques carry.
That sounds surreal.
It must be. And that dedication to the 4.0 a.m. start, which might come from old city watch traditions or maybe some pre-Lenten solemnity thing, it requires this massive civic commitment, you know? Everyone has to be there, ready, in the cold dark.
Yeah.
The whole visual and sound experience, the synchronized music, the unique lantern light in the pitch black pre-dawn apparently makes the Morgenstrahl completely unlike any other carnival opening anywhere. It's all about precision and that atmospheric darkness.
And connected to that really specific local vibe, there's the Vogelgriff custom.
Yes, Vogelgriff. This one's specific to Kleinbasel, the Lesser Basel side of the river, historically speaking. It happens in January.
And what is it?
Well, it involves these three traditional figures, the wild man, Wild Ma, the lion, Lou, and the griffin, Vogelgriff, who parade and dance through the streets.
Okay. Sounds kind of strange.
It's definitely one of those deeply rooted traditions that probably looks completely baffling to outsiders. The Vogelgriff figure itself does this special dance, often on a raft on the Rhine, sometimes showing only one leg, and it's all accompanied by drummers and flag bearers.
Huh.
It's a very specific, very local ritual. It really underlines the tight-knit identity and pride of Kleinbasel, you know, maintaining its own distinct character within the bigger city.
And speaking of the rivalry between the two sides, Gross Basel, the historically richer side, and Kleinbasel, there's a permanent monument to it, isn't there? Der Lelekönig.
Ah, the Licking King. Yes.
Yeah.
This figure, it's on a building near the river, and it's perpetually sticking its tongue out.
Sticking its tongue out.
Yep. Sounds kind of childish, maybe.
Yes.
But the sources give it real historical context. The statue was originally on the Kaufhaus, the old warehouse, in Kleinbasel. And that tongue-sticking gesture, it was a direct, permanent, mocking insult aimed right across the river at snooty Gross Basel.
Seriously, that's hilarious.
It is. It's like this ancient, ongoing, but probably good-natured rivalry literally carved into the city's architecture.
Okay, and you can't have traditions this specific without a special food, right? The Basler Leckerli.
Of course. The Leckerli. It's the city's signature sweet. a hard, dense, very flavorful honey spice biscuit or pastry.
And is there a story behind it?
There is. And it's fascinating because it links this local treat to a major world event. It wasn't just some random local favorite that caught on.
No.
No, apparently it was invented specifically for the Council of Basel. This was a huge church council held there back in the 15th century.
Oh.
They needed a treat that would last a long time and be easy to transport for the thousands of international church officials and delegates who came for this massive, historically important meeting. So this humble little biscuit is directly tied to centuries of global significance.
That's amazing. Okay, moving quickly to infrastructure quirks. Something very practical, but apparently highly unusual. The tram with 7 doors.
That's right. Basel's known for having a great tram network, super efficient. But some of the older trams they use actually have 7 doors. On each side.
7 doors. That seems like a lot.
It is. The sources point this out as being really rare internationally. It's obviously very practical for getting huge numbers of people on and off quickly, especially with all those commuters crossing borders in a compact city.
Makes sense.
But yeah, it's a very specific functional adaptation you just don't really see elsewhere. Speaks volumes about the city's focus on maximizing efficiency for that high density traffic.
And then there are things hidden away, like under the Cannonfeld Park. It looks like a lovely park, but underneath.
Right. Underneath that peaceful park, a favorite spot for families, dog walkers, lies a massive piece of Cold War history, a huge nuclear bunker.
Get out.
Really?
Yeah, really. It's a stark reminder that Basel, because of its location right at the crossroads of Central Europe, has always been seen as strategically vital. This enormous bunker was built to shelter tens of thousands of people if the worst happened.
Wow.
It represents this vast, hidden civic defense project sitting right below an ordinary community space. It perfectly captures that contrast between Basel's charming surface and its underlying strategic importance.
And finally, a train line that people are apparently really fond of. This Löffelfingerli?
The Löffelfingerli, yes. That's the affectionate nickname for the S9 train line, which runs from Basel out towards a town called Löffelfingen.
And what's special about it?
Well, it's not the fastest route, and it's not the most direct. It kind of meanders along a more scenic, traditional path through the countryside over these long, historic viaducts. It hasn't been modernized in the same way as other lines.
So people like it because it's old-fashioned.
Pretty much. It's highlighted as this short, nostalgic route that's become a cult favorite, especially among railway buffs, precisely because it resists that hyper-modern efficiency. It preserves a sense of older railway travel, linking that industrial history back to the city's character. It's those little sentimental things, isn't it? Like a beloved old train line. They really define a city's unique feel beyond just the big highways and airports.
Okay, so we've gone from these huge centuries-old red sandstone cathedrals all the way down to, yeah, 7-door trams and people floating down the Rhine with their phones in a fish bag.
Quite the range.
It really is.
Yeah.
But the common thread, the thing that seems to hold this really complex identity together, it's that productive friction, isn't it? That blend of old and new.
Absolutely. I think the core analysis from our sources is exactly that. Basel somehow manages to breathe history. You see it everywhere in the medieval buildings. You witness it in those ancient, precise rituals like Fasnacht and Vogelgriff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it lives completely and actively in the present. It's fueled by international business, cutting-edge modern architecture, and all that innovative engineering driven by its unique location.
It's a place where, like you said, a 14th century city gate, the Spalantor, feels just as relevant and functional as a Zaha Hadid building just over the border at Vitra.
Right, and the traditions aren't treated like museum pieces you just look at. They're active, often mandatory parts of city life that each generation genuinely participates in.
And thinking globally, you have these incredibly specific, maybe even esoteric local traditions like the Vogelgriff dancing in the street in January.
Yeah, very local.
Coexisting right alongside massive global events like Art Basel, which brings in the world's top modern art collectors and artists. And they're often using the same hotels, the same infrastructure, operating within that same very particular civic atmosphere.
And that coexistence, it isn't just an accident, is it? It feels like a powerful statement about the city's confidence.
How so?
Well, maybe Basel can host these huge international events and manage the crazy complexities of the Dreiländereck precisely because its own local identity is so strong, so secure, reinforced daily by all these specific, sometimes odd, little details.
Right. So what does this all mean for you, the listener, trying to get a handle on Basel?
I think it means that the city's unique character isn't just defined by the big ticket items, the famous museums, or the government buildings. It's really defined by the buildup, the accumulation of all these small, sometimes curious, occasionally eccentric specifics.
Like the exact recipe for Leckerli, or the Mocking King statue, or relying on river currents for ferries.
Exactly. Those details are what anchor the whole cosmopolitan environment. They give it a depth that maybe purely modern, purely global cities lack. Basel kind of demands that you look closely, doesn't it?
Yeah. You have to appreciate the commitment it takes to keep a ferry running on just physics, or the cultural dedication needed to pull off that 4 a.m. Morgenstreich every year.
It's a city that really holds on to its ancient heart, while simultaneously acting as this dynamic hub for three modern European countries. It proves that tradition, when it's maintained with real civic pride, isn't a drag. It's actually an engine for uniqueness. Hashtag tag outro. And maybe this raises an interesting question for you, listening at home. Just think about the level of sustained, like intergenerational civic commitment it takes to keep a huge citywide carnival like Fastnacht going, especially one that must start at 4.0 in total darkness, no matter the weather or the hassle.
Yeah, that level of discipline is something else.
Or the pride involved in keeping those low-tech, motorless ferries running purely on river currents, even when faster, modern boat tech is obviously available. It really speaks to this deep respect for history, for function, for place, a willingness to sometimes prioritize continuity over just pure modern convenience.
So Basel isn't just where three countries meet on a map. It's really where history meets the present, constantly, day in, day out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a city that seems to fully embrace the future without ever loosening its grip on the very specific details of its past.
Well put. We really hope this deep dive has given you a much richer picture of Basel, you know, something far beyond just its size or the standard tourist cliches.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.